The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander, live from Media Row at Super Bowl 58 on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. As Brent just mentioned, live from Media Row, Mandalay Bay, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. What a scene here on DraftKings Network Super Week. Segment presented by 1-800-Flowers.com, DraftKings official flowers for Valentine's. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Over on the couch, Mr. Bidlin.
Yeah.
Chilling.
Might be getting real comfy over here today.
I'm totally getting to the couch earlier today. None of this hour up here at the desk on my throne looking down on you.
It is very much like that, by the way, yeah. I feel like I'm being talked down to right now.
It's the Colin Cowherd thing, right?
Right.
Here's my word.
I can't possibly be right in this dynamic. If we get in an argument, I'm wrong in this dynamic every time.
Take it down the mountain with you. On the show today, and it is our final regular numbers game time slot before Super Bowl 58. Rufus Peabody will join us again. He won't leave us alone. Rufus Peabody will be here on the show, as will Matt Brown in his typical Friday morning spot, as will James Salinas, former Westgate Super Contest winner. He will join us with his Super Bowl 58 thoughts, and Aaron Schatz will join us. Now, Aaron Schatz, who's not only the over at FTN Sports, but also the creator of DVOA, his proprietary stat, Aaron is an AP voter, famously, one of the 50 AP voters who voted on all the awards for the NFL Honors show last night. And we happened to be with him having dinner, you, me, Matt, and yep. Aaron, when the awards came down. Not all of them, but certainly the back end of them. And where he is specifically involved for our discussion today, among others, is Lamar Jackson ends up winning the MVP, let's start there, with 49 out of the possible 50 first place votes. The person who did not vote him first place, our friend Aaron Schatz. And when that news came down, not that Aaron in any way regrets his first place vote, which was Josh Allen, by the way.
Yep.
Josh Allen, he had Josh Allen first, Dak Prescott second, Lamar Jackson third. Not that he regrets it in any way, not he completely stands by it, but if you... It's just a human being thing. Lamar Jackson's first MVP, he was unanimous. This one, he falls one vote short. If you have to kind of live the rest of your life knowing that you are responsible for that, even though you are completely okay with your vote, there is a little part of you that dies inside. And so we lost Aaron for about 10 minutes of that dinner where he was just like, oh, man.
Yeah, I can't wait for him to tell it in his own words when he joins us. But it was, I think you just laid it out perfectly. He doesn't regret what he did, you know, the choices that he made. I think there's sound reasoning behind what he did. We talked about this often with him in the middle of the season, of when you get this influx of data-driven voters now that we haven't had before, they're going to see this markets like this a different way than the old school voters, and that was the reason guys like him were added, and they might look differently than others. So I don't think it's shocking to see that, but yes, when you're the only person, it becomes a little rough.
And you have to deal with Ravens fans who are going to be upset with, right? So it's a whole thing. So we'll have Aaron on later. We thought, stupidly as it turns out, that it was going to be a night without any drama. Well, there was plenty of it, beginning with Coach of the Year, where Kevin Stefanski and D'Amico Ryan, Stefanski of the Browns, and by the way, the Browns end up with four awards, three of which were bettable. Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, where Myles Garrett won it. Obviously, they end up winning Assistant Coach of the Year, not something that was not bettable. Jim Schwartz ended up winning for Defensive Coordinator of the Year. And of course, we'll get to momentarily in Comeback Player of the Year. But when it started with Coach of the Year, Stefanski and D'Amico Ryans of the Texans end up with the same number when you tallied up the 5-4-3-2-1, 1-2-3-4-5 voting. But Stefanski with one more first place vote, and he wins the award. So everybody who had Kevin Stefanski bets, congratulations to you. on that. You cash at whatever price, whatever great price you had that at. So by virtue of the first place vote tiebreaker, Stefanski wins that. And then we thought, okay, well, that will be the big story of the night. Wow, somebody won with a tiebreaker. Nope.
Well,
go ahead.
You okay with that? But we didn't really, I guess we were all at dinner. We didn't talk through this thoroughly.
By the way, I should say with Coach of the Year, it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 1, 2, 3.
Right.
MVP is the only thing that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so 21-18-6 for Stefanski for a total of 165 points. 20-21-2 for D'Amico ends up at 165 as well, but the 21-20 first place gives it to Stefanski. I'm okay with it. If you're going to do 1, 2, 3 or any kind of tiered voting, you're doing tiered voting for a reason.
I'm very much okay with how this played out. I would have gone with D'Amico Ryans,
me
but
too.
Completely understand Stefanski winning. And as long as it was close, I can see it was close, I'm good with it.
So we thought the drama was that. Like, that was going to be the big thing. Because, you know, defensive rookie of the year, okay. Will Anderson won it by, you know, a shade. We get it. That was possible. That was a very close vote, by the way, between the top three. Anderson, Jalen Carter, and, of course, Kobe Turner. The others, you know, Miles Garrett, who was at the restaurant with us last night, he ends up winning Defensive Player of the Year. You know, that was close, but people expected that to be close. But then Comeback Player of the Year, we had kind of convinced ourselves, anecdotally, sure, but that DeMar Hamlin was going to get it. The one thing that Aaron Schatz got right, and we repeated it a million times on this show, though we said it, I'm not sure if we said it with comeback, we certainly said it with MVP, which is, you know, this could be a year because of the tiered voting where someone's not going to get the most first place votes. They're going to get the most second place, and they're going to win the award. Could have happened with Coach of the Year. Didn't. With Comeback Player of the Year, the shocker of the night, Joe Flacco with 13 first place votes, 13, 26, and 8. So 13 first place, 26 second place, 8 third place votes. Beats DeMar Hamlin, who had 8 more first-place votes than did Flacco with 21,
ugh,
but it went 21-7-14. So shout-out to Aaron Schatz for properly identifying this scenario. But to be completely accurate, and we'll talk to Aaron about this later, too, is in this award, Comeback Player of the Year, Aaron's thought was, okay, if you're not going to vote Hamlin first, he's probably completely off your ballot.
He told this this to us like 2 months ago, three
yes.
months ago, something
yes.
like that.
And that was very logical to me because
me too.
In how you sort of do the calculus on this vote, you know, because you and I, let's just go the trajectory of you and me talking about
right,
this.
Yeah, yeah.
So over a year ago, was it over? No, not
like
over a year
ago.
No,
yeah,
but
yeah,
like yes,
10 months ago.
10 months ago, I'm screaming at you on air. He almost died on the field. All he has to do is show up. You then
set the Kelly barometer.
The Kelly barometer
is
like,
he has to get back out there, and he needs to end up in the stat book, right?
Okay.
He needs to make a tackle, do something.
And then he does exactly that, tackle.
That's right, and I said give it to him.
And you said give it to him.
Yeah.
And then you convinced yourself further then, and you took a little incoming for this, that if it's not Hamlin, you'd give it to Baker Mayfield over Joe Flacco.
Well, it was when the Joe Flacco stuff started up.
Yeah.
I was, and I'm still in shock. I am in the guy who should have finished third in this won it to me. Joe Flacco with Comeback Player of the Year. Because, yes, it was, we're giving so much credit to Joe Flacco for what he did in 5 games of the regular season when Baker Mayfield did this the whole season when nobody expected anything from Baker Mayfield or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
By the way, Baker Mayfield is the dude I cannot stop running into all over town.
Are you serious?
He's everywhere. Yeah. He's everywhere.
I want to run into Baker Mayfield and tell him exactly what I just said.
I will tell him. I know this guy killed.
And then buy him like a Miller Lite. I feel like that's his beer.
Here's the thing with all of this, though. So, and we'll talk more extensively about this after we talk about Super Bowl 58 later in the show when Schatz gets here. I think we have reached the point now where even the NFL gets, they've got to redefine that award. So right now, let's compare this with the NBA award of Most Improved. Most
yeah.
Improved has some interpretation, but okay, it's at least in a tighter little context. With Comeback Player of the Year, as it's stated in the NFL, that is such a catch-all that ultimately comes down to your interpretation of best story of the year. And so there is some movement now to redefine this award and maybe parse it out into a couple awards. We'll talk to Aaron because I'm not sure exactly what they've landed on, but there seems to be some momentum for that. And so Joe Flacco, congratulations to those of you who had Stefanski. Even bigger congratulations to those of you who had Flacco. And by the way, a lot of people were giving us, you know, certainly we deserved credit for the scenario where if you had the most second place votes, someone could sneak into one. People were giving us credit for the Flacco thing. I don't know that we talked about it any more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Congratulations to all of you who had it.
I mean, you and I talk a lot of awards. It's not like this was, we were definitely talking about him as he was on the rise in the awards. But you and I were sitting at dinner last night kind of cracking up. I'm rolling through all these tweets we're getting. I'm like, all right, here's a tweet hating on me. Here's a tweet giving us a lot of praise. Here's a tweet. I'm like, I don't even know where these are coming from.
The thing with the Flaccos, though, the Flacco award winners, those are triple-digit ones.
Yes.
Like, we are in our you know, feeds. There's 100 to ones. There's 150 to ones. So good on all of y'all who got that. I did not see that coming in the end. And we'll talk also about the fact that in Hamlin's case, there were, in fact, people who had him second or third, which makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. Like, well, I get it. He kind of died. So that's kind of good compared to what Flacco did.
Toss out this award. It's ridiculous. You need to redo it. You need to. All these voters need to be clearly. They need to know clearly what they actually are voting on. And that's just not. We saw it play out.
We'll have that discussion later. But first, Super Bowl 58. Chiefs and Niners. Matt Brown will join us. And I, after 2 weeks of giving all the reasons for both sides, I've made my decision. And this segment is presented by DiGiorno. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorno. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. It is a numbers game live from Media Row, DraftKings Network's Super Week here. By the way, I haven't read any tweets since we've been down here. Should I read some tweets?
Sure. Rifle through some.
This is from CW Blue Jay, who says, this is a commentary on the Megapod with Rufus. He sums it up by saying, sun versus moon. Gil says, the sun gets a big check mark for hottest celestial object. Rufus replies, you really think so? I don't see that. Last year, the sun wasn't as hot. Maybe it's a small check mark. That was kind of how he did. Like, argument for the sake of argument for Rufus. He'll be with us a little later on. The better life. The way they introduced Comeback Player of the Year, Tim Lawson says, the way they introduced Comeback Player of the Year as performing on the highest level and returning to that level sounded like they were explaining why Hamlin was about to not get the award. It's a good call. We didn't hear that, but yeah. By the way, was it even available in Vegas? I don't think it was. I think it got blacked out here.
What, Comeback Player of the Year?
No, the whole show.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Yeah, we were all out dinner. I had no idea. No way. It was blacked out
for
here?
For local, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. So much, by the way, there's too many tweets to read. I'll read some later, but about the appearance from Merrill Hodge yesterday on the show, which was just absolutely spectacular. So shout out to Merrill Hodge, who had some very strong opinions on, of course, not only Caleb Williams, but really retrospectively on C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, which he got dead on last year. We are joined by our old primetime action co-host, and of course, well, not only that, but our Friday regular here on A Numbers Game all football season, the great Matt Brown, everybody, host of the All Angles Football Podcast, football betting podcast.
Yes.
And the handle, rather, weekends here with Mike Somich. How you doing, man?
Doing well. I'm looking. I haven't done the leg cross yet. I see you guys with the leg cross. Maybe that's like next segment or something. I'll get in with that.
You got to mix it in. We're here for an hour and a half.
The casual setting allows you guys got used to it yesterday. So you went right to the leg cross where I'm kind of all doing the like, oh, okay. All right. How am I going to do that? Next segment.
Okay. Plus, you're the guy who gets middled right here, right? So we can just kind of sit back and look at you like this the whole time. Yeah. Yep.
Man, it was a fine dinner last night with you fellas.
It was.
Yes.
It was
good stuff over there. Celebrity sightings abound.
Abound.
Yes.
Yeah, abound.
All
Dustin
over the place.
Dustin Sweetelson among them.
That was the biggest one.
That was the biggest one.
The biggest one. The most unexpected one, for sure, as we're like sitting there just like, oh, look
sure,
at that.
Sure, you had your Miles Garrett's and your Jake Glazers, but there was Dustin Sweetelson.
Yeah, just coming in, just rolling in. We're like,
from
oh,
Sharp
look at
Money
that.
Here at Visa.
Happy
birthday, Dustin.
He did come over to tell us the most popular country singer in the world and was at a table two over from us. We didn't even know.
The three of us did not know.
But Zach Bryan.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
I know the name, but yeah.
I don't do the country music, so like, yeah, no. I don't know either.
All right. Yeah. Super Bowl 58. I don't know if you know this, Matt, but mm-hmm. there is a game on Sunday. Are you aware of this?
A big one.
Niners Chiefs, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 Eastern, where the Niners remain at this moment, Friday morning, 2-point favorites. The total still not budging, 47.5. First of all, do you think either of these will budge between now and game time?
Man, that is the thing that I continue to go back and forth about because, you know, in years past, right, like you just knew it was favorites and overs. Like it was just, you know, everyone wanted to come in on the favorite. You knew that the dog money line was going to get pounded, so then you would end up getting money line value on the favorite somewhere along the way and all that. But it's, I don't know, with like the 30-plus states now, like I said, this total goes from 48 to 47.5 and has been stuck in the mud for a week and a half now. Like, I don't know. Maybe it ticks back to 48, but it seems like there's a willingness of people to take the under at 48, so I don't know how long it lasts when it does hit that.
What have you finally decided on this?
I played the Chiefs. I got more prop action, really, than I do the stuff on the game itself. I ended up playing the Chiefs, but it's one of those deals where the handicap for me, I can see a double-digit win for the 49ers. So it's like it's a weird thing to have a bet in on a team that you don't think can win by double digits, and you can easily talk yourself into the team that you didn't winning by double digits.
Because that is the follow-up that I've asked everybody, not everybody, but most people who have had the Chiefs these last 2 weeks. My next question, I asked Zach, I asked Kelly, maybe not everybody.
My favorite piece of conversation about this game, I think.
Yeah, so if you have the Chiefs, I'm like, yeah, but if I told you a team won by double digits, who is it? Everybody without even blinking goes Niners.
Yeah, because you have those. Here's the thing. I think if you're a Chiefs backer, you're probably naturally leaning towards the under. You're probably thinking, okay, the way that they go about this, we've seen them with these long methodical drives, putting together like the 6 and 7 minute drives and all that. Like, I don't think you want a shootout if you're on the Chiefs. I don't think that the offensive firepower for the Chiefs is going to be able to sustain a firefight with the 49ers. And so, like you said, the way this gets off the rails pretty quick is if this defense for the Chiefs that has been very, very good all year and has been good in the playoffs can't figure out a way to stop this ridiculous wealth of talent that the 49ers has, and then they're just scoring every time they get the ball, and the Chiefs are just not able to keep up. And then next thing you know, we look up and it's the third quarter, and like I said, they're up 11, they're up 14, they're up 70, whatever it might be.
So again, for 2 weeks now, by the way, where's my camera? I have no idea where it is. For 2 weeks now, I have said, you know, okay, here are the two ways to look at this game, and I'll say it one last time here beforehand, but I sort of, I'll couch it like this. Again, it's the Jimmy the Greek T-chart where all the check marks, most of them except one, go to the Chiefs. Coach, quarterback, tight end, defense, schedule, kicker, and the only one that goes to the Niners is this massive offense as a group, right? They have the massive check on that. That's one way to look at it. And I don't know, 75% of the people here anecdotally here at Media Row, when we have them on the show, when we talk to them, they are not necessarily bettors. And they subscribe to that as, I've watched the playoffs. Clearly the Chiefs have been better and the Niners have barely gotten over these two teams. Okay, that's one god at, you know, one shrine at which people worship. The other one is, you know, Christmas Day, the day that both the Chiefs got crushed by the Raiders and the Niners got crushed by the Ravens, the Niners still would have been at worst a 5-point favorite on a neutral that day. We've talked about this for 2 weeks. That's the other shrine to, you know, that's the other, the construct that you can view this game within. And that's the god that I worship in the end, right? It's the larger sample size. That's what I believe in. And I do believe that, you know, simply if they say, like, if they have one defensive series and Chase Young is doing dumb things, sorry, but it's kind of Chase Young. Yeah. And when Washington got rid of him, I sort of said, I go, Sweat's the better player. People couldn't believe that, like all my San Francisco friends. And that played out. I think, like, he'll be off the field so quick. I think the Niners, and maybe it won't even take that, I think the Niners' defense ability to revert to what they were during the regular season, as opposed to whatever this version is we've seen them in the postseason, I think that's a real possibility. And if that happens, and Mahomes has got to chase that team, Yeah, I think the Niners win it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other part of the handicap, too, is if the run game, I think, for me, if Pacheco doesn't have success in this thing, then it could be a pretty bad day. Yeah. Because, again, it's the – this team is just not really built to, one, play from behind, and it's certainly not built to have to go to completely nothing but passing, right? Because now if you're relying – your de facto wide receiver one at this point is a rookie, which Rashee Rice has been fine. Like, he's been good for them, but, again – that's you, now it's relying on a rookie. It's relying on Marcus Valdez-Scantling. It's relying on trying to then at that point, if they know that you're passing every single down, you have to assume extra attention gets
right,
made to Kelsey.
Lock in on Kelsey.
And so it's just so it becomes this whole everything gets out of whack, you know, at that point. And I think the other thing that is interesting to me, and I'm sitting here telling you I'm on the Chiefs talking about why I think the 49ers or whatever, but the other thing is like if the 49ers do find themselves down in this game, they are much more equipped to come from behind than the Chiefs are, right? I mean, like, the splash plays left and right that these guys had all season long. I mean, there was a game.
while saying that they don't want to, obviously, because it's still Mahomes, but yes, they're much more equipped.
Yeah, I mean, there's a game this year in which Brock Purdy threw for 368 yards, and he threw for 368 yards on 19 completions.
Amazing.
19 completions, 368 yards. He had 54, 45, 44, 230s, a 27, 225s, and a 24-yard reception in that game alone.
Yeah, what is that, 18 yards, 19 yards per completion or something?
So it's just you look at that and you're just like, this is – That is why this team can come back.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there and you're holding a 49er money line ticket or even a -2, whatever it might be, and you're down 10 in the fourth quarter, I don't think you're like completely dejected and like tearing that ticket up and going and heading to the bar until like 3 minutes left in the game. You know, I think that's like when you can start to really, really panic. But if I'm down 10 heading in the fourth quarter holding a 49ers ticket, like I'm not really that worried about it.
Would you, considering you have Chiefs, I have Chiefs, if that situation played out, would you be grabbing any piece of 49ers in game? Or
it would be interesting to see what the number would be, for sure.
Yeah, let's kind of, as you're talking about this,
it would be interesting to see what the number would be. As good as they are at defending the perimeter, I mean, like, they can be had over the middle. You have Debo that can run those drag routes. You have Kittle over the middle. You can start Kittle over the middle. Look at that. Kittle over the middle.
Look what you did.
Look what I did.
I'm riding with my final exacta, the Niners over the Chiefs at 11-1. I'm riding with those MVP plays on not only Christian McCaffrey, but also Debo and Kittle. And if I didn't have any of those, I probably would have a small bet on the Niners, and that's it, probably. We're coming back. More Matt Brown with all his prop bets next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network from Media. This segment is brought to you by Bayer Aspirin, the official sponsor of Fans Hearts. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, and Matt Brown hanging out. Media Row, DraftKings Network, Super Week down here in Mandalay Bay. A who's who. Yesterday was bustling, little quieter here this morning, for sure, but expected to get pretty rowdy here momentarily. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I'm going to read a bunch here from, let me start with some from both today and yesterday. I will try to get to everybody, but I don't know that I will. Just a slew of Joe Flacco ones. Vegas Valkyrie, cheers, Gil, locking into a numbers game daily just keeps giving. Thanks, lads. This from Coach Brian, winner, winner. Thanks. Thanks, VSiN and Gil. I played this at 25-1 after his second start. I think I thought it didn't have a chance. By the way, Vegas Valkyrie was at 100-1. Tim Lawson at 100-1 as well. Forrest Lehman, I'm buying what Merrill was selling yesterday. Merrill Hodge, couldn't agree with your take on GM-type position or other more. What a treat to listen to. No wasted words. Great interview. I'm in on his breathing deal also. Cleef T.A., who's a great Megapod guest and, of course, on a numbers game and one of the greatest follows out there in football Twitter, said, I don't recall who it was on your show a few months ago, but I recall watching it and hearing them make the case that Hamlin could lose because he's either won or off the ballot altogether. That's exactly what happened. You talk about Aaron Schatz. He was the guy that did that. J-Rod, I'm most excited for Gil's tech issues on any of the pre-kickoff shows with Captain Jack this weekend. He's doing a super stream, his annual super stream, and I've perennially had audio problems. Bill Krakenberger did catch that pass yesterday from Joe Montana. A lot of people were tweeting about that. Do we have that video real
quick? Oh, we have that video. Yes, we do.
So this happened yesterday. We were at Amalfi, the Bobby Flay place, inside a restaurant. That's Joe Montana, the greatest of all time on the right. That's Bill Krakenberger going deep.
Going deep. Little butt.
Got it.
Touchdown.
So Crack was so nervous about this.
I would have been nervous too. Are you kidding me?
Well, he was. You know, they distributed the footballs to everybody who's going to be catching. By the way, this is a Kenny Mayne thing, and the proceeds go to the military who have had leg injuries, because Kenny Mayne had a leg injury at football, and he wants to to try to help those in the military who've had leg injuries. And Crack, you know, they distributed footballs, and Crack thought he got the biggest and the most difficult one, and I'm like, you're catching it. You're not throwing it. And he was like, oh, yeah. But I said, for the rest of your life, you're going to be able to say you caught a pass from Joe Montana, and he's so pumped, and I'm so thankful to him for allowing me to share in it, because I got a picture with Joe Montana. Somebody tweeted, they're like, oh, you got a picture with the greatest of all time. I'm like, RG3 was there? I don't know if that was that funny.
I might have had another.
You're like, Joe Burrow? Where's Joe Burrow?
I might have had another embarrassing injury story here yesterday.
Oh, no. What did you do?
Well, I told you last night. But,
God.
So we were working over against the wall. Anybody who's worked in media has always found themselves working in a tunnel in an arena or here, even as big as this is. I needed to find a power outlet. So I'm over on the wall. You and I were talking post-show. We're talking about some things post-show, what we're doing for social, that kind of stuff. Gil leaves. Not 4 minutes later, I'm packing up, getting ready to go. I say Yvonne Frankel, our great director. I don't even know what his title is these days. He's all our bosses, probably. He's sitting over there with me. And I'm about to get up, and I'm like, oh. I say, you're going to have to give me a minute. Both of my feet are dead asleep, because I was, like, sitting with, like, my legs crossed, like, working on the computer. And I'm like, all right, like, shake him out. All right, I'm good. So get up, go to get up, plant one leg perfectly fine, plant the second leg. It is dead asleep, and I start stumbling over. And then I avoid my laptop that's on the ground and just kind of just dive next to it. And then I look up, and Kurt Warner's like 3 feet away, just like looking at me, doing an interview.
It's like, who's this kid?
Your both feet fell asleep?
Yeah, both.
Both legs, he said.
It was both feet, though. Yeah, it really wasn't the legs. It was both feet.
I think that's a condition.
No.
It's funny you say that.
Might be something to get checked out.
It's funny you say that because at the time I was like, I don't think I've ever had both my feet fall asleep before.
Sometimes you get numb and like one appendage because you like laid on it wrong. You do whatever. Both feet going numb sounds like something, you know, maybe a physician. Get on that. Get on a little web doc.
I'm extremely flexible, Matt. Okay. Yeah. That's what was the problem yesterday. Okay.
What's your favorite prop that you have, man?
My favorite prop that I have is longest field goal made by the Chiefs. That one is my favorite. I know that's probably not what you're expecting and not what everybody else
was
expecting.
Wow, that was a buzzkill.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get your reasoning for it.
So
longest field goal by the Chiefs.
Harrison Butker is one of the best kickers, you know, of all time.
We should go back to talking about Kelly not being able to stay.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, everyone's like, wait, did he just say a field goal prop is his favorite prop? But seriously, so he was 94%. On the season. He was 12 for 12 on field goals of 40 or longer. He was 5 for 5 on kicks from 50 or longer. He made his only 60-yarder that they lined him up for as well. And with the way that Moody has been kicking, I don't think they're going to run, like, be really happy to run him out and have him kick these, you know, mid 50-yard field goals. They might opt to either just go for it or, you know, do some sort of pooch punt or something like that. So Andy Reid, I think, is going to be much more okay with sending his kicker out there, who literally, again, made 94% of his field goals over the course of the season. And so that one I like a great deal.
Okay, so real quick, yeah. First quarter, Butker makes one from 42 yards. You feeling good about your bet or no?
I mean, you know, it's good to have one on the board.
All right, wait, no. Butker makes it and then goes down with an ankle injury or something after he made it. You think you're home with that bet?
And then we have to get in the argument about why can't the punter kick extra points? and then we got to get into that thing.
Then we got to have another bet.
I mean, ultimate Matt Brown bad beat.
Yeah,
right.
Next thing you know, Kelly's pulling a muscle.
I keep hurting the same leg in the dumbest ways.
All right. Addition, and you already talked about, let's start from the top here. In addition for the Chiefs plus two that you have, you did play Mahomes for MVP. You wanted to get that in too.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially it's essentially just a better price on the money line, in my personal opinion. Yeah. I don't see too many outcomes in this game in which Patrick Mahomes has a bad game and then they win still.
And let us just remember again, because this is one of the first things I said in the first 2 weeks, is this is an award given out on the fly. So it's actually not like as we saw with the Damian Williams game, right, where he scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns to end up with 3 in that game. It's kind of a three-quarter award.
Yeah.
So, like, you got to get it in quick. And usually, all things being equal, we'll just give it to Mahomes then.
It's like, is there a route to victory for the Chiefs in which Mahomes only throws for, like, 170 yards? I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so, right? If Mahomes doesn't have a good game, then I can't imagine a scenario that the Chiefs win. So it's like a plus 125 on the money line, where right now they're, what is it, like plus 105 or something? Yeah, so you get extra 20 cents,
yeah, I
basically.
Yeah. And shop around. I've been surprised at the varying prices I've seen on that.
I do think one thing that's interesting about the 49ers in from an MVP perspective is, like, sure, like you said, like, as long as Purdy has a decent game, they will likely try to give it to him. But I do think there are routes to other guys winning the MVP.
I think that's a very popular thought, that one team does have other routes, but the Chiefs don't. Yeah, Niners do, Chiefs don't.
Yeah, I mean, I get why he's plus 225, and I think that if, in all likelihood, if he has a somewhat decent game, they will still give it to him. But I do think that there are routes to other guys getting it for sure. I mean, we have seen over the course of the season, right, where when you have guys like Ayuk and Debo, and, I mean, we can throw Kittle into the mix as well, where they have these just monster games, right? They have these just blow up games.
Yeah.
And could there be a scenario where Purdy throws for 230 and one of those guys has 155 of the 230? Like, we've seen that already this year, right? Yeah. I mean, Kittle had a 149-yard game. Debo had a 148-yard game. Ayuk had a 156-yard game. You know, like, this is very possible, I think, for the 49ers.
I agree with that, but there also people – I've heard a couple people bring this up, and it is interesting where, okay, how often do we see a quarterback on a team in a Super Bowl that you can get over 2-1 with to win Super Bowl MVP, right? Yep. So, like, I get it if people are making Brock Purdy bets too, because then
let's squeeze that last one in. There's you have a kick return one.
Yes, so under 27 and a half yards on the longest kick return. Butker has an incredibly high touchback rate as it is anyway.
Yes,
and then if you look on the Moody side of things, he still has a big leg. He just, you know, it's been inaccurate here and there. And also, I'm this is just speculation stuff here. Obviously, no inside information, but I also kind of think with these coaching staffs, you get the ball on the 25 anyway. You probably have a talk with your kick returner. It's like, listen, unless it is, like, very obvious for you to take this out, let's not take the chance on a turnover and giving them the ball back on a kickoff. Because, like, weird thing, we talk about this all the time, like, stupid stuff happens on kicks.
I have no doubt that conversation happens.
Yeah,
like, whether it's executed or not.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's executed or not, yeah, for sure. But it's kind of like, you know what? Let's just make sure we retain possession of the ball and let's go. We get it on the 25. That's not bad.
Because Andy Reid just has to point to Patrick Mahomes, yeah, and the Niners just have to point to the offense collectively. Yeah, it makes sense. We'll come back. Matt has a whole bunch more of these props to get to. I count 5 more.
Wow.
We will do that. Matt Brown joins us, James Salinas, Rufus Peabody, Aaron Schatz here later on. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, live from Media Row. This segment is presented by 1-800-Flowers.com. That's 1-800-Flowers.com. DraftKings official flowers for Valentine's. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin on the couch here at Media Row. Beautiful DraftKings set here that we have. And Matt Brown joining us as well, the host of the All Angles Football Betting Podcast. And, of course, The Handle, which he does with Mike Somich as well, here weekends at VSiN. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. And
I'm assuming All Angles through the UFL season too, right?
Obviously.
Okay, obviously.
Sure. What was your comment when I said what happens after football season becomes the No Angles podcast? Blue Hen Bill, congratulations to me and winning the Joe Flacco Comeback Player of the Year Award, along with a ton of your other listeners, please call Rufus Mr. Peabody in honor of Rocky the Squirrel. I don't know who Sherman would be, LOL. Nevada A's, I think people who won awards are just, they're punch drunk at this point. They're so happy. Nevada A's, or I thought this was dead in the water. I fell off my couch when they announced that he too had Flacco at 100-1. Daytime Degenerate. Did this really feel like a unanimous MVP for Lamar year, anyone? Aaron did everyone a favor not going with him and not making him a unanimous. Bit Flair, glad the voters decided that taking the Browns to the postseason is more impressive than coming back from the dead. Tim Lawson, do you think DeMar should be a favorite for Comeback Player of the Year next year? Could he be perpetually a favorite until he's a regular starter again and eventually receives it? I think that's probably true. At least next year, I think it's true.
I think you need to monitor the roster status, right, Matt? Because, like, there were games where he was just inactive.
I don't think he's a favorite from the start anymore, but I do think that if he, like, starts off having a great season, yeah, he would instantly become the favorite.
What I'm saying, yes, is even if I knew he was the third string, you know, safety that was going to be out there every game, then, yeah, I think that's a way to look. But he was just inactive of so many games this year. I don't know if I can jump to that quickly.
Matthew Livingston, hey, Kelly, since you love the Pacheco over, would you entertain Pacheco MVP for a little sprinkle? Much love for the show.
Yeah, I do a little sprinkle on that.
A little sprinkle. Yeah. Sprinkle me, Meg. Well, Chance Copperpot. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let's get to that. I'll circle back to it.
Yeah, because you have your prop going. Yeah. Chance Copperpot. I was all over Hamlin pretty early. I got it at plus 250. But you know what? I made out much better on Flacco, even though I bet less on Joe. 100-1. Might not have made either bet without ANG. Thanks, guys. Our pleasure, man, to the extent that we help. Sports Pick Magic. Between Merrill Hodge and Rufus, I think I learned more this week than I did in 4 years at the prestigious University of Maryland. Go Terps, baby! Touchdown Jesus. Flacco was the knew Flacco was the winner when the NFL had Vinny Testaverde, Tim Couch, and Brian Sipe present the award. We assume that's a joke based on the MLB telegraphing their passes. Motor City Mike, with the Browns almost sweeping the awards and the way they exited the first round, the only sensible conclusion one can draw is that they are one of the most underachieving teams of all time. How about that take on that? Again, okay. Not just the three awards, but the fourth with best assistant coach of the year as well, to Jim Schwartz. And finally here, John B., we'll read more of these. You three on the couch talking sports just gave me an awesome program idea. What if you three each weekday talked and watched sports into early evening? Would be prime time watching you guys live. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a wild idea.
We appreciate it.
I see what you did there.
I see what you did there. All right, Matt, you've got more props to get to, sir, and it starts with Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm on the over from a rushing yardage total as well. Again, I have to play this into the handicap that I have for the game, right, which is there's going to be a lot of Pacheco. It's going to be a lot of the Chiefs trying to attack what is the obvious weakness, at least on paper, for the 49ers defense, which has been the run defense, specifically run defense to the outside. And you look, you bring up Chase Young, a liability for sure when it comes to teams rushing to the outside as well. And so I went over 65.5. If we look, 16.5 carries is what his line is projected at. I think that, you know, that's not incredibly efficient for him to have to get to, like, if he's getting 17 carries, 16 carries along the way, doesn't have to be all that efficient to get to this number as it is anyway. I'm on the Chiefs. I think he ends up getting more carries than that. So if it's more like 18, 19 carries, then I think it works even better in our favor for that as well. I mean, look, because he runs angry, people don't realize that he was like a 4.37 guy, whatever. It's like he's super, super, super fast, so he can bust one as well. So I don't like have that out of the range of outcomes too, that we could get almost halfway there on one kind of splash play type deal too. So I like that angle here with Pacheco. And if you look, like, the 49ers defense, 51% success rate to rushes outside the tackles this season. It was the third worst mark in the entire NFL. And so I imagine Andy Reid and them are going to take advantage of that speed that Pacheco has, run outside of the tackles, and see if they can continue to kind of put together these long, methodical drives, which is the whole kind of, in my opinion, the key to this handicap, which would be keeping those playmakers for 49ers on the sidelines, putting together long, and then, but you have to capitalize, right? You got to get in the end zone. You can't do these 7-minute drives and then kick a field goal, right? It's like they got to get in the end zone my opinion, more times than not, because I think the 49ers are going to score.
So I think there's a lot of reasons why betting the over on this prop made sense. The biggest one, though, that really pushed me over the edge and made it a little bit bigger bet for me, Matt, was the Ravens game, where he was not ultra efficient. You're talking 24 carries, 68 yards. You just want to go back. I mean, this number's hit five of the last seven games he's played in. But when the Chiefs were just continuing to hand the ball off to him, even with, you know, mild success, and you knew in that big of a spot there was a determination from Kansas City,
yes,
to keep running the ball.
100%.
That's the biggest selling point to me here of why I'm like, if you did it against Baltimore, why wouldn't you keep doing that against San Francisco?
What do you think what does a stat line have to look like for Pacheco to win MVP? What would be the stat line, do you think?
Well, you couldn't answer that without saying, and Mahomes'
exactly
stat line would,
yeah,
have to be this.
Yeah, because that's the curious thing for me is like, okay, he'd probably definitely have to score two touchdowns, right?
Yes,
Pacheco.
Two,
right,
touchdowns and over 100 yards, and Mahomes has to go under 200 and have a pick.
Yeah, like Mahomes has to really be underwhelming is the thing.
Maybe under 230 with a pick.
Yeah, I mean, because like, so... With that, what is Pacheco right now in the MVP market? What do we? Where is he?
I think he's 30 to 1 or something.
28 to 1. Yeah.
So that is actually value on what we're saying he would have in order to win MVP, which is kind of interesting. Because if you do like a same game parlay, and like Pacheco two touchdowns and 100 plus rushing yards is actually 16 to 1, where you're getting 28 to 1 for him to be MVP. It's not like that with McCaffrey, though, right? So McCaffrey's at 475. If you go to McCaffrey and it's like, okay, McCaffrey's going to have to go for 100 rushing yards. He's going to have to score two touchdowns and like add what, 40 receiving yards probably? Like, I mean, because he's a receiver,
yeah,
too. That actually pays out 9 to 1, which is more than the 475 you get on McCaffrey from an MVP. So it's kind of like you can reverse engineer these two sometimes with the same,
yeah,
game parlays, but that actually pays out higher on Pacheco for what we have just sat up here and said, okay, the line's going to probably have to look like that for him to win MVP. It's 16 to 1 if you put it together like that, and it's 28 to 1 if you get the MVP.
Let's get to your final one. So you had Pacheco most rushing yards in the game, and,
yeah,
you had him over in his rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have three Niners props, by the way, Pacheco, where you have it lined with 65.5 rushing yards. Mm-hmm. You have Purdy over 11.5 rushing yards, Purdy over a half a pick, and then Kittle over 20.5 longest reception.
Yeah, Kittle was the one that was interesting to me as I was digging in. I guess because he's a tight end that plays with these other super explosive receivers that you don't really realize how often this guy gets away in from the defense. And so you go in and then you look. And his long – so he played in 18 games. And this is lined at 20.5 for his longest reception. His longs in games this year, he had a 29, 38, 28, 34, 66, 24, 32, 44, 35, 58, 32, and 28. He went over this 20.5 for his longest reception in 12 of the 18 games that he played in. And in one of the other ones, his long was a 19. So it was like, he missed it by 2 yards. And so it was just interesting to me that Kittle gets behind these defenses as often as he does and kind of breaks for these long catches. And if we go to this whole, like, path of least resistance thing, we already talked about how good the perimeter defenders are for the Chiefs. You would think then that would funnel a lot of some of these targets over the middle, and Kittle could benefit from that and get some extra targets along the way. So that one to me was one of the deals where I was going, you know what, I guess I'm going to go ahead and play this, considering I didn't realize how often he actually – breaks these long ones.
Yeah, I like that. I went over his receiving yardage. The middle field, I think, is going to be open. I think a lot of people are making cases for Debo, which makes sense to me, too. But I think we're going to see the Shanahan playbook with so many different things designed for Debo that I think that's going to lead to even more Kittle being that main guy kind of over the middle there.
I know you're here for the whole show. I wanted to give you a chance to, like, just flesh out all your props before everybody else gets here. Yeah, I want an honest answer to this question. How long did it take you to decide which shoes to wear today, knowing that you'd get the full body shot?
You went conservative.
I'm setting it at over 2.5 minutes.
What do you mean? These are hot, man. What are you talking about?
I mean, they're cool, but they're not like green and yellow like you usually rock.
They
were hard to get, man.
I'm going
to
need an answer over 2.5 minutes.
I'll take under, but like it's a good line. I'll take under, but it's a good line.
Jeremy Wangle for the win.
Look at that. Come on, those are good.
We're coming back. Rufus Peabody, James Salinas, Aaron Schatz, Numbers Game live from Media Row in Mandalay Bay.